Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Hey, shut up!
This is going to pick up
your voices. Doing a podcast back here. You guys are blowing it.
For all you podcast listeners out there, we got a few obnoxious people in the front of the bus. So if there's some chatter in the front, please don't take anything away from the professionalism of this particular podcast.
I'm JP, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground. It's the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it's one of the oldest independent publications in the United States. We distribute free monthly issues about music, action sports, art, and even subculture. On today's show, we'll be interviewing snowboarder Travis Rice, going into our archives for a discussion about Buy Nothing Day. We'll also be doing the Daily Calendar Rundown with editorial assistant Esther Moronio and checking out some new music from Dark Seas and Max Payne and the Groovies, two local groups that are quite good and have got some great songs you'll be excited about. We're also going to discuss winterizing bikes with Anthony Wu of the Salt Lake City Bike Collective. Travis Rice is a professional snowboarder who's been competing for over 10 years. The 29-year-old has received top honors and medals in both EXPN and X Games competitions. He's also the producer of several snowboarding films, and he's recently started a clothing line. He recently spoke with Slug's Chris Proctor when he was in town to promote his new film, The Art of Flight.
What audience did you have in mind when making Art of Flight? Who were you trying to inspire? Like, what did you want people to take away from the film when after they saw it?
No, that's a good question. I mean, the audience that we were really going for, well, it's tricky because I think one of the biggest challenges we had going into this film is, you know, how do you make a core film that, you know, speaks to the outside world, to someone who's never snowboarded before, so to speak. It's tough because, you know, you have two completely different palettes, you know, that you're trying to, you know, serve these flavors up to. I mean, first and foremost, like, the core crowd, I mean, that's our peers, that's like our friends, that's our people. And so, you know, we weren't going to go into it and make something that my good friends that I respect can look at it and be like, really? Yeah. All that effort and you really just blew it out for the mainstream? You know, so going into it, it's a tricky balance between that and then also bringing in story elements, bringing in a little bit more layman approach, I guess, at trying to showcase, you know, what it is that we do, where we go, and why.
You talked about this a little bit in the foreword of your photo book, but what does The Art of Flight mean to you? Why did you title the film that?
Well, it's kind of a funny evolution that happened throughout making it. I mean, first we were just calling it Flight. Then we kind of decided we want to, you know, change it and evolve it a little bit. And so much of it was based on cinematography. And I mean, our days revolve around catching 2 minutes of the right light in order to shoot.
Yeah.
You know, you won't see any, like, you won't see us hitting kickers in the shade or, you know, everything we did, we made it a priority to hit during the right light. And so then we're going to call it Art of Light. Well, didn't really work either. So we ended up calling it The Art of Flight. And the way I kind of look at that, it's almost a bit of like a jumping off point. The toughest part is, you know, just taking the first step.
With that in mind, how much at mercy are you with, in terms of Mother Nature, you know, kind of making it impossible to film or get to locations, stuff like that?
You're constantly, you know, I think I say a line in there that's, it's kind of like, you know, you're at the mercy of your own decisions. You know, it seems like when really bad things happen, it's never based on one bad decision or one bad event. It always is a series. And so we are at the mercy out there, but constantly trying to do the right things. We're able to correct anytime we, say, stray from that, you know, walking that ridge of safety. That's when bad things happen.
Yeah.
Is when multiple bad decisions are made.
Talking about that system of checks and balances, I know you guys went to a lot of new locations for this movie. Can you kind of talk about what it's like dropping in on a new peak as far as what are you looking for, what do you have in mind, what are you communicating to the guides or, you know, things like that?
You know, the grass is always greener on the other side, and I think that's kind of what keeps us looking. You know, so much of what I get floored about when I go out and ride, we go out into the backcountry, is looking for unique features, looking for so many set of variables out there when it comes to like the snow, the terrain, how the wind lays it down. And I know that many variables, you know, eventually it all comes together and forms the perfect feature. That is what really keeps me and a lot of us still looking for new places. That's like the lure of going to new places, is coming around that ridge, that mountain, up over that knoll and seeing Shangri-La.
What section of the film are you most proud of and why?
Man, it's a tough one. I think I'm probably most proud of Revelstoke section. I mean, Alaska was so incredible, amazing. You know, Revelstoke, we really worked our asses off for it. We were up there for almost 2 months. It was the end of the film. You know, without Revelstoke, I felt like we really didn't have a complete film. Nicholas Mueller came up. You know, we had Arrow, Niemela, Scotty Lego up there. You know, we just worked for it and ended up having some incredible days. I feel like the big push behind this film was more towards, you know, progressive big mountain freestyle riding, big free riding, and I really felt that the Revelstoke section of the film, you know, continues to push it.
So when you talk about progression, these days you have teenagers throwing triple corks in the park. I think that's all an Art of Flight has showcased, probably the world's best backcountry riding. What do you think, or what is your opinion of where snowboarding is going now? What's next for the sport?
Yeah, I mean, when we came out with That's It, That's All, it was a really progressive film. The riding was, as far as tricks itself, a bunch of new double corks, a bunch of new kind of tree-tap riding styles. And coming into this film really, it definitely is still a progressive film, but more in the respect of kind of big mountain free riding. I think that's what this film does really good, is capture, you know, how good it can be out there free riding, because that's some of the toughest stuff to capture. You know, snowboarding as a whole right now, it's at a crazy level. Kids triple corking. I mean, you watch slopestyle contests and it's like three double corks and like a switchback 10 or something. And I mean, that's nuts. It's incredible how talented they are. I think that there's almost beginning to be a little bit of a disconnect in the sport as the up-and-coming riders, you know, get a little younger and the tricks get crazier. You have this crew of well-spoken, you know, film stars. You know, the guys who kind of get a lot of the accolade, John Jackson, you know, a lot of the guys in our film, really, Mark Lanvik, you know, Nicholas Mueller, Gigi Ruffs, and then you have this kind of new upcoming fleet of incredibly talented, you know, park riders. Mm-hmm. You know, you asked me what's next, and I think that this is actually a really good lead into that. Over the past about 3 years, I've been working on doing this new snowboarding contest up in Canada, actually.
Supernatural?
Yeah, we did the natural selection about 4 years ago in Jackson Hole, and it was a great success. Everyone who came, you know, claimed it was one of the best contests I've ever been to. Economical times were tough, but, you know, we spent a lot of time and really wanted to take that concept and take it a lot farther, so we have created what's called the Supernatural. Spent about a year and a half looking for the perfect run to do this on. And finally found it up at this Katski Lodge up in Canada, interior British Columbia, outside of Nelson, BC, called Baldface Lodge. Found this face. It's a 2,200 foot long face, about 2/3 of the way down. It has a perfect flat bench in it, and it's real steep. And the idea behind it is we went in with about 12-man logging crew at the beginning of the summer, and spending 4 months with heavy machinery, you know, heli lifts, and a full crew, and essentially building the best run in the world. We're building over 100 features on this face, which then gets kind of almost a coastal snowpack where snow just sticks to everything. That's where you get the pillows, just huge Volkswagen-sized pillows.
Sweet.
And you're gonna end up with, yeah, one of the more progressive runs out there.
To get more info on Rice's film, check out the website artofflightmovie.com. And for more info on Rice himself, like him on facebook.com/TravRice. Max Payne and the Groovies are an experimental rock band from Salt Lake City. Originally formed in 2009 as a two-piece, then expanded to a five-piece a few months later. Their first EP was released in November of 2010. It was called Five to Groove. Their new album, Tortilla Gold, is going to be out on Friday, November 25th. Here's their song, Piano, off their new album. Sitting at night. Catch the Groovies during their release show at Urban Lounge with Spell Talk and Future of the Ghost on the 25th at 10 p.m. for just $5. And for more info on the band, check them out at ReverbNation.com/Max Payne and the Groovies. Buy Nothing Day is an international day of protest against consumerism that takes place on Black Friday, the busiest shopping day around the world, and the day after Thanksgiving in America. Protests in the past have included credit card cut-ups, zombie walks, and non-commercial parties. Slug alum Aaron Anderson spoke with Kali Lassen in 2009 about the protest and Adbusters in general. Lassen is the co-founder and editor of Adbusters.
When I first heard about Buy Nothing Day, I just kind of thought, wow, this is a cool idea, you know. I don't shop at Walmart. I'm not proud of the consumption that goes on.
Right.
As I've researched it a little bit, I've come to realize it's much more of a symbolic thing, you know.
It's sort of symbolic. I think that we have to, the big task is to change our culture.
Right.
Each one of us individuals have to change a little bit, but, it's not going to happen if a few of us sort of hide away in our homes and read a book on Buy Nothing Day. It's going to change when people suddenly wake up to the fact that Black Friday is a horrible ritual.
Yeah.
It's just not appropriate to the 21st century, you know, for 300 million Americans to get together every Black Friday, you know, the day after Thanksgiving, and then have this horrible pig out, you know, on that day that belongs to some old culture we have to give up now.
Right.
In the 21st century, and we're fighting climate change and we're trying to reduce our carbon footprints and our whole culture has to heave. So in a way, it's a symbolic gesture that eats away at the old culture. It's an attempt to give birth to a new kind of culture.
Right.
And we can do that by just playing our individual parts and hiding away, you know, and just reading a book, as I said, or we can do it by going out and clogging up the system and everything in between. And I don't agree with those people who sort of say, oh, well, you know, it's not going to achieve a lot, you know, if you don't... buy something now, then you'll buy it tomorrow or whatever. I don't agree with that. To me, that feels like old lefty whining, you know, the people who have sort of, you know, fucked up the political left now for a long, long time. They've got nothing new to say. All they do is whine.
Right.
I think that Buy Nothing Day is a fantastic event, and we can come up with, we can change our own lives, and we can come up with symbolic gestures that change the culture.
So there's a lot of different ways that it looks like the people celebrate the day or recognize the day. What do you think is the most effective way of celebrating it? You know, is it people going out and doing pranks, or is it people going out and handing out flyers, or is it just people staying at home and buying nothing? Do you think
this is really a question that everybody has to ask themselves. I mean, we are living at the moment when the future looks pretty bleak, right? I mean, we're kind of caught in this zero point of systemic collapse, right? Where you look at the future, and if you're a young person, then you don't have much of a future if the temperature of the planet keeps on going up, and if the gap between the rich and the poor keeps on getting bigger, so I think the most important thing is for people to feel that they have to do something. And I think that for some people it just means a little bit of a feeling of a general strike, where you say, well, look, on this day I'm just not going to do nothing. I'm just going to, whatever, sit at home and read a book, you know, and I'm just not going to participate in this crazy, unsustainable capitalist system.
Right.
For other people, you know, they want to go out and have a good time, you know, so they put on some pig masks and cavort through a mall, or they hang up a banner somewhere, or they come up with a credit card cut up in front of a mall or whatever, and I think that's great too. I mean, those are the fun things that get publicity and spread the meme. But this year I was hoping that, we've had our brainstorming sessions here at Adbusters, and this year we're trying to sort of become a little more edgy, where we're sort of trying to call for a general strike on Buy Nothing Day, and for people to sort of think about and talk about, where this consumer capitalist system is taking us, and to try to be a little more edgy, try to do more of that sort of edgy side of Buy Nothing Day, where you go into some store and maybe 10 of you, and you kind of fill up all your cards there, and then right at the last minute you decide not to buy anything. They were full of stuff, or you know, just basically start clogging up the system and start basically getting a little more angry about the whole thing, because this is, I think my own feeling is that we're beyond the pranks now. We're
right.
Basically at the point where either we come up with a new kind of capitalism, or some more of a bottoms up kind of a capitalism, and stop all this craziness that's happening, especially that's happened there over the last 1 year, or we really don't have a future. And I would like to see more pissed off anarchists, strutting their stuff on Buy Nothing Day.
I know a lot of people who celebrate the day by just, staying home. I know the first year I did it, it was kind of eye-opening for me, because there was a couple times I was like, wow, I need this or I need that,
Yeah.
I need to run to the store to get this, and it kind of, brought to mind, how much I actually do consume.
Yeah.
What kind of experiences have people, shared with you?
Yeah, well, that's actually the way most people do it. I mean, there's a few people, who go out that actually do stuff, and pull off the pranks and the shenanigans. But I would say 90% of the people just make a little pact with themselves. They just say, okay, this sounds interesting, I'm going to try it. And they vow that they're not going to buy anything for 24 hours.
Right.
And they don't necessarily have to stay home. Most people still go about their daily lives. They go to work or whatever they want to do. And those people, many of them actually have a very powerful kind of a life-changing moment where they, halfway through the day, they suddenly, just like you said, they just want something. They want a cup of coffee, or they want a hard bar, or they want to, they just suddenly have a yearning for something. And then they start to fight that yearning, and they suddenly come to the realization that this impulse to satisfy any desire that you suddenly get, that this is a very powerful impulse, and it's very, very hard to go against that impulse. And they suddenly realize that their lives are actually fueled by those kind of impulses, that their whole life is all about satisfying, these damn desires, And then many people go through a bit of an experience like giving up smoking, They suddenly sweat a little bit, and they sort of feel like giving up, and they go through a hard time for a few hours, and then if they succeed in not buying anything, then they suddenly feel good, They suddenly showed a certain amount of self-discipline, and they overcame this impulse to stupid impulse to buy, which they weren't really all that proud of. And they make it through the 24 hours, and then they say, fuck, that felt great. After that, many of them say, I think I'm going to try and do that for more than just a day. I'm going to get my family together, and we're going to try and do Christmas differently this year, or from now on, I'm going to make a New Year's resolution, not to sort of live the kind of a five planet lifestyle that I've been living for the last for most of my life.
Right.
Yeah. So Buy Nothing Day for a lot of people is a day when they wake up from the media consumer trance and start living a different kind of a life and enjoying a different kind of a Christmas, and so it's a day where a lot of people kind of just have that epiphany and change their lifestyle.
For more information on Buy Nothing Day, as well as Adbusters' past campaigns and future ones, check out adbusters.org/campaigns/BND. To read the full article, check out our November 2009 issue in our archives at slugmag.com. It's time for our weekly daily calendar rundown. We like to sit down with editorial assistant Esther Moronio, and we talk about upcoming events for the week. This week we're talking about November 22nd through the 28th, and there's a whole bunch of stuff going on, as usual.
There is, as usual.
There's an event right next door at the Gray Wall, actually.
Yeah, it's called Look Who's Not Coming to Dinner Art Show, and it's being put on by Anna West of Art Duh.
And it runs until November 26th.
Mm-hmm, 22nd through the 26th, so stop by and check out the art. Come say hi to slug people next door. Or not.
Yeah, I don't know if you should. Pretty reclusive bunch. But people can try.
Yes.
Knock on the door. Maybe we'll be there. And we'd like to acknowledge all the contributors of Slug, and when the birthday comes up, we will give them a birthday mention.
Yeah, we actually have a lot, so let's just go down the list.
Yeah, let's do that right now. Happy birthday to Robin Banks, the Slug illustrator.
Mm-hmm. He actually did a localized cover a few months ago. It was really awesome.
And that's on November 22nd. On Thursday, November 24th, well, it's Thanksgiving, and also the birthday of
Giselle Vickery. She's on our marketing team. And Mary Catro, she's one of our videographers.
And we'll just jump ahead a little bit to Saturday, November 26th, when it's the birthday of Jason Young.
He's one of our video game reviewers. He's fairly new to the staff.
That's all the birthdays.
And yeah, that's all the birthdays.
We have to go back in time a little bit, though, and talk about Friday, November 25th's concert.
Yes, we do. Girl in a Coma is playing with Fences and Black Box Revelation at Kilby. There's actually a Slug article written by me in this month's Slug about
you.
Girl in a Coma. Yes.
In the hard copy edition of Slug magazine, yes. Where people can pick up anywhere they desire.
Yes, and they're a really awesome band. So it's a group of three Latina women. Two of them are lesbians. They're really awesome. They play kind of Tex-Mex rock and roll. It's really cool.
Just so our listeners aren't confused, we don't mind that they're lesbians. You pointed that out because that influences their music?
Because it's really awesome. Like, three women that are Latinas, and half of them are half, or...
Two-thirds.
Two-thirds of the group. Thank you. Look, I'm an editor, okay?
I know.
I don't do math ever.
That's okay.
Anyway, two-thirds of them are gay. It's pretty awesome.
Oh, you're being
in
positive.
My opinion.
Great.
Yes.
You're not stereotyping. You wouldn't do that.
No.
Speaking of stereotyping, did you do the interview in Spanish?
I didn't, but I should have.
You are fluent in Espanol. See, I know the words for the language. And so that's going to be muy bueno, everyone.
Yeah, I'm going to be there, and I'm going to take mi madre.
Sí, es bien.
Mm-hmm. Porque es el día después de Thanksgiving. It's the day after Thanksgiving. So, yeah.
Oh, I knew what you were
hanging
saying.
Out with family.
I definitely knew what you were saying. I was just going to say a bueno, because that's how I respond to things in Spanish when I don't know what people are saying.
Olé.
There you go. Sunday, November 27th, the Geek Show movie night at Brubies.
Yep.
I'm very excited about this lineup.
I know. The Muppet movie and Team America. It's going to be puppets galore.
One of the favorite movies from my childhood and one of my favorite movies from adolescence.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the new Muppet movie, though? That's the great question.
I don't think so. I think that one's still in theaters.
Yeah. Well, sometimes Brubies does the new stuff, but usually when you go to the Geek Show movie night, which is free, by the way, they're old second-run movies. Not second-run, but they've been around.
Mm-hmm.
They get around, like bicycles.
Cool classics.
Hey, thanks, Esther.
Yeah,
I think everyone learned a lot more about us today.
Yes.
Es verdad. Go to slugmag.com, check out our calendar section there, or flip to the back of our Slug magazines for our daily calendar, or, hell, why don't you look it up on your iPod, on our... Or your iPhone.
See?
Or your iPad. Or Slug Magazine app. Great. Good chat. Dark Seas is a psych rock band from Salt Lake City, with Kyle Wilcox on vocals, Diego Mijares on guitar, Rhett Hansen on drums, and Irvin Martinez on bass. They originally formed as a Joy Division cover band, and I had the pleasure to see these guys at our most recent Craft Lake City. They did a really good job. They started writing their own material after being invited to a gig with Max Payne and the Groovies, and they released a demo during Localized this past Friday. From that demo, here's Salt City Blues.
See?
read more about the band, check out our current November issue on the stands and at slugmag.com, or check out the band on Facebook by searching for Dark Seas. We're sitting here with Anthony Wu. He's the co-director of the University of Utah Bike Collective and a cycling enthusiast, I guess you could say. Is that a good title for you, Anthony?
Yeah, sure.
And you guys help promote good cycling practices and proper bike maintenance and such in the community.
Yeah.
And you're a part of the Salt Lake City Bike Collective in general, which has a really interesting history in Salt Lake City. It was founded in 2002, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was founded in 2002 by Jonathan Morrison and I believe six other guys. Been around for a while and it's gotten a lot bigger.
And its purpose is to do what?
Its purpose is to provide a resource for the Salt Lake community. We do programs for kids, the Earn Your Bike program, and we do open shop weeks or open shop nights. These are do-it-yourself programs where people come in, we offer resources and knowledge to help people get their bikes in good condition.
Now, I personally have rebuilt the bike at the Salt Lake City Bike Collective location, and I found it to be amazing. The staff's really helpful. It's also a non-profit, which is great.
Yeah.
And it gets money from grants and donations, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Correct.
But you guys at the University of Utah have a slightly different mission. You're more interested in sustainability and helping out the University of Utah students, if I'm not mistaken. Will you speak about that a little bit?
So similar to the Salt Lake Bike Collective, we offer parts and tools and knowledge to help people get their bikes back on the road. We just want to make sure people are out there cycling and they're safe about it. They know exactly what to do if anything goes wrong with their bikes.
And we're coming up on an interesting time of the year for cyclists. There's a lot of really active cyclists in Utah. It's a great state for cycling, but they kind of run into an issue at this time of year because of the cold and the rain and the snow. But there are some ways to help get your bike in gear, and you probably experienced this helping students at the University of Utah, giving them advice about winterizing your bikes. What would you recommend for your average, your novel, your first-time cyclists maybe that aren't used to the cold weather?
You definitely want to make it as pleasant as you can for yourself. Bundle up, wear some good dry clothes. If you're planning on getting wet, always carry around some extra clothes. Nice change of shoes always helps, and whether it's in your bag or in a good set of panniers or something. Also, as far as outfitting your bike, fenders are always a big help. I always recommend people ride with fenders. I don't know how people do it without. But at the same time, you gotta plan on fenders aren't gonna do much for you if it's falling from the sky. So, like I said, wear some good dry clothes. Also, make sure you have lights on your bike, even if it's bright outside. Visibility might be bad from it snowing or raining. Make sure you're as visible and comfortable as you can be.
Now let's talk a little bit about tires and brake maintenance. I don't know, can you put chains on a bike? People will wonder.
They offer studded tires. I've never used them. I don't really see a need for them. Just ride within your limits. You don't want to push it too hard. If it's really slippery outside, I guess maybe some studs might help. But in the last 6 years I've been riding, I don't think I've ever come across a need for those. Main thing is maintenance on your bike. You want to winter does some bad things to your components. You want to always make sure you're keeping everything clean and lubed up. So I'd say at least maybe once a week, just wipe off all the salt and re-grease your chain. That's about all I'd do. End of the winter, I'd maybe consider a full teardown and get through everything.
And you guys offer a facility to do that at the University of Utah?
Yeah, we do. We're actually, JT and I at the University Collective, we're considering maybe like a end of winter kind of day where people can bring their bikes in and we'll teach them how to tear their bikes all the way down and get it all cleaned up and tuned up for them.
It sounds like a messy process, and it is. You get your hands a little greasy.
Yeah, definitely. Plan on spending a couple hours and getting pretty dirty doing it, so make sure you got the time for it.
But it's fun. There's nothing like greasing your own hub, as my mom used to say.
Yeah.
Is that correct? I mean, what's that thing, the chain component that goes into the bike, the crank?
So
I guess you'd be greasing your own crankshaft or something.
You got your bottom bracket in there. Most of them are newer styles are all sealed bearings, so you don't really deal with grease, but you still want to make sure it's really cleaned up in there.
Yeah, I had a 1970s bike that was a solid piece of steel, and that thing I had to
grease. Yeah, so you'll probably have loose bearings, or at least loose bearings in there.
That was a pain in the ass.
Oh yeah, it's never fun the first time, and especially if you're not wanting to do it, it's not going to be a good time, but I think it's important for everybody to know how to do it.
I agree. Yeah, you should do it at least once if you own a bike.
Right.
Can't let everybody do all your repairs all the time, or else you're never learning.
I honestly think it's so silly that people pay so much money to get their bikes maintained when a lot of it you can actually do yourself with really simple tools.
Yeah, it's pretty easy after you learn how to do it the one time.
Yeah.
Now, the University of Utah arm of the Bike Collective has been in existence for about 3 or 4 years, was it?
Yeah, we opened, I believe, 2006 by Jonathan Wilkie and, I believe, Weston Edwards. The two of them started it. They had a pretty close partnership with the Salt Lake Bike Collective and decided they wanted to bring that resource to campus.
And what's currently going on politically with the center, if you're at liberty to talk about it?
No, that's fine. Everything ran pretty smoothly under the University Benyon Center up until a couple years ago. Or just actually early this semester, we wanted to sell used bikes, but it doesn't really fit under Benyon Center's mission. So that kind of threw up a red flag, and the last couple months or so, we've been dealing a lot with who's actually going to support us and sponsor us. I guess it turns out that the Benyon Center is not our best partnership, and we're looking into partnerships with the commuter services on campus. Hopefully we'll see how that goes out.
So what can University of Utah students or people that live in the area do to help you guys out with getting more settled?
Probably just coming in. We've been trying to keep as good of records as we can about who's coming in, what kind of volunteer hours we have, and just to make sure we're able to prove that we're a major useful resource on campus.
And you guys promote sustainable transportation, obviously, and awareness at the least,
right.
Of community cycling as being an important part of campus and Salt Lake City life in general.
Mm-hmm.
It's a valid cause, and people can also donate to you guys as well to help your cause out. And you've been cycling for how long?
About 6 years.
Six years.
A little bit longer.
And you love it, obviously.
Yeah, it's great.
And the winter doesn't slow you down.
I can't say that.
You're supposed to
come in. There's definitely times when winter cycling's pretty bad, but you know, you just gotta do what you gotta do.
Grin and bear it, mainly.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if you're really a fan of cycling and you believe it's a good mode of transportation, you should support it all year round.
Exactly.
You can't just be a fair weather cycler.
Right.
There's too many of those kids around town.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I don't blame them, but you know, it's riding a bike is. Winter cycling is really not for everybody. Some people have other options. It might be more convenient, but for the people who can and actually want to, I think it's a really great thing, and I'm happy there's people out there on bikes.
That's a more positive approach. I'm giving them a hard time here, but anything helps. If you can just get out there once a month and do it,
and
save
exactly.
some carbon emissions, that's
just
better.
Just ride a bike. It doesn't matter how often you do it or whatnot.
Where can people get more information about your organization?
Oh, you can go to the university or the Salt Lake Bike Collective's website, and they actually have information for Baggy Blue Bike and the Westminster and University of Utah and the Salt Lake and Ogden. I wouldn't quote me on the first couple, the Westminster and Aggie Blue Bike. I'm not sure if it's on there, but
SLCBikeCollective.com.
SLCBikeCollective.org. .org.
Right, you can't forget the organization
yeah,
part of it.
Yeah, it's an organization.
Well, thanks a lot, Anthony. I'm sure our readers and listeners that are fans of cycling are going to be really appreciative for all this information, and thanks for working up there. Good luck with your transition if you do have it to a different location.
Yeah, hopefully we find where we need to be and find the right place for us.
Hey, well, thanks, man. Have a good day.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks for listening to Soundwaves from the Underground. For more information about the music, interviews, and guests from this episode, please visit slugmag.com. And as usual, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, or maybe a random thought about the show, send us an email at soundwaves@slugmag.com, or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. That's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we really do enjoy the occasional drunk message we receive. So to get a few Jim Beams in you, give us a shout. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine, and it's produced by Gavin Sheehan, with associate producers Jeanette D. Moses, Ricky Vigil, Esther Moronio, and Jonathan Paxton. The executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our show's theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis, with our main logo and art design by T. Doan and technical design by Kate O'Connor. Special thanks to Adam Sherlock and Eric Tomorrow for their help and support. Join us next week as we talk about the Endless Indulgence charity event at Bar Deluxe, go back into the archives with Anthony Bourdain, and preview the Beehive Bazaar. Thanks again for listening, and make sure you go click like on our Facebook page and tell your friends.